there was this older musician that would loan me records. He would say, you need to hear this, you need to hear this, and then I would bring that back. He would give me something else. And there was a Fire Sign Theater album in that stack one night, so that got me started. But what really got me into you guys a couple of times called into Alan Handelman's radio show in Charlotte, North Carolina. Yeah. And one night, one of you guys or a couple of you guys, you were all on the phone, maybe in combinations of two or all four, but
yeah,
a couple of you guys were at a county fair.
Oh, yeah?
And one of you were giving, and I've got this tape somewhere. You were giving commentary from the fair, and you could hear all the animal, and it was like we were getting a free album on the spot.
Oh, that'd be so cool. If you can find it and do an MP3, I'd love to hear that. Because, you know, being a member of the Fireside Theater, which had its nascence in the 60s, and its renaissance, if you will, in the 70s, as Carl Gottlieb, the author of Jaws, said so well, if you were living in the 70s, or I guess he said the 60s, you can't remember any of it.
If you remember it, you weren't there.
Yeah, that's it. If you remember it, you weren't there.
What are you working on right now? What have you recently finished, and what do you have coming up in the future that you're excited about?
Hey, that's a very good and reasonable question. I'm going to talk both professionally and personally.
Sure.
Personally, on Saturday, I'm taking off from here in the Canyon Country, adjacent to Beverly Hills, Benedict Canyon, for a three-day, four-night train trip across Canada, the Canadian Rockies.
Wow.
On a special trip that my wife Melinda Peterson and I have been wanting to take for a long time, from Vancouver to Toronto, and then we're going to go by train up to Montreal, comme on dit en français, alors, and then to Quebec. And I was there with my dad and my mom in 1953 when I was 13 years old. My dad loved hiking and fishing up in that area of Canada, northern Canada, northeastern Canada, I should say. And so we went up the St. Lawrence River to the Gaspé Peninsula and a wonderful resort called Tadoussac. And my dad introduced me to trout fishing in the streams up there. And that was the first time that I got to practice the French that I'd learned in grade school. Et alors, le français canadien, ce n'est pas différent que le français parisien, which means in English, the Canadian French. Le français canadien is a little different from Parisian French. Le français parisien. And you can certainly hear it. It's more like a Cajun French, but even more distorted. Mm. And they throw in all kinds of American words. I really can't wait to get back there and have some fun in the French speaking Canada. The other irony about this, and then I'll carry on, is that my daughter, Kristen Proctor, now Campbell, Kristen Campbell, is married to the eldest son of Gordon Campbell, who was the premier, which is the governor, of British Columbia for 14 years. He was the mayor of Vancouver before that, and now he's the present Canadian ambassador to the United Kingdom. How about that for a coincidence?
You should get free parking while you're up there.
No, they don't know. They don't have cars in Canada. They're not that developed yet. It's basically snowshoes and, you know, dogs, you know, pulling you in sleds. You know, and in the summer, they put little rollers on the sleds. You haven't been up there recently, eh?
Ever.
Okay, well, yeah. The actual fact is, in reality, réalité, la réalité, and as the Firesign famously asked, what is reality, it was Procter and Bergman that basically toured in that area of Canada. For those of you who don't know who I am, or why John wants to talk to me, I will try to explain very quickly. The Firesign Theater was, because two of us are dead now, a four-man group that did satirical comedy for the first time in multiple layered comedy records for the first time in 1965, I guess, to the present day. Our group has basically been assaulting your minds for 50 years. And at the time that we began doing it, we developed, thanks to a fellow who worked at Columbia Records, who insisted that our records were going to become famous, and it got us a spoken arts contract, which meant we didn't have to pay for studio time, which meant that we could spend hours investigating and playing with all of the special effects and the technical and vocal effects that were available to us to create these multi-layered comedy albums. And nobody has ever done anything like it afterwards, and certainly no one before. We've been called the Beatles of comedy, the Monty Python of America, and Rolling Stone chose us as one of the best 100 acts of all time. And I'm still acting, so there you go. In any event, that's the background of Firesign Theater. You can go to firesigntheater.com, and you will see what we've done. You can buy stuff if you're a Firesign Theater fan. You can buy stuff even if you're not a fan, because, you know, any credit is good with us. We're not going to run a credit check on you. But if you send us a check, we'll make sure it's not rubber. And also, you can go to planetproctor.com. P-R-O-C-T-O-R. planetproctor.com, and you'll see what I'm up to. And if you want to subscribe to my free newsletter, which hopefully gets out once or twice a month, you'll have a lot of fun, I'm sure, if you're listening to this show and you know what we're talking about. And the most exciting thing, John, is that one of our albums, Don't Crush That Dwarf, Hand Me the Pliers. And listen, if you've just lost a bunch of PC millennials, go bleep yourself, because Don't Crush That Dwarf, Hand Me the Pliers is all about surfing on the television. And we did it before there was a remote control, so you could surf on the television. And it is one of the hysterical recordings in the Library of Congress of the country we all love so much. So I've kind of caught you up with the past and the present. And at the moment, I'm preparing for this trip to Canada and then a motor trip down the East Coast to visit friends and relatives as the autumn leaves fall. We're calling it the Leaf Peepers Tour. And unfortunately, it's going to end in New York, where we have a lot of friends doing Broadway shows right now, and where I'm going to catch up with all of my school pals, because I went to school in Manhattan, and later at Riverdale, and later at Yale, and most of those folks live in that area. My wife is from West Hartford, Connecticut, so we're going to go up there after New York, and then from there go up to a wedding for my wife's family in Massachusetts. So that's basically what I'm doing socially. Now, let's take a little beat and just go ahead and take a deep breath. What I'm doing professionally is, yesterday we mounted a performance for the first time in front of a live audience here in the Los Angeles area at a theater in North Hollywood, of a play that I've co-authored with Samuel Warren Joseph called God Help Us, or If You're Right, You're Left, and Politrix as Usual. And it stars Ed Asner as God.
Oh, man.
I know, oh man, alive, and he's still alive. Yeah. So Ed and two other wonderful actors, Christopher Guest, who is related to, what's the guy's name, who does all of the crazy parody movies, the other Guest, it's his brother, Gee whiz, I've done voices for those movies. Christopher and... what is his name?
I know Christopher Guest did, like, Waiting for Guffman and Best in Show.
You know, I misnamed him. His name is Nicholas Guest. You're right.
Okay.
Christopher Guest, his brother. We had Nicholas Guest and his wife, Pamela, playing alternately a conservative and a liberal in a format, a debate, if you will, moderated by God, Ed Asner, in order to try to figure out why we're so screwed up down here on Earth, because God is afraid that this imbalance, this split in our consciousness between liberal and conservative, is going to destroy the balance in his earthly creation. And so he's trying to find out how he might fix it. This is a play written by me and Sam Joseph called God Help Us. Okay? And this was the first time we performed it before an invited audience, and they loved it. All right? So this play is going to have, as we say here in show business, it's going to have legs. And we have a wonderful producer and director, and we're hoping that it will try it out. We're going to actually do performances, productions in various parts of the country, New Orleans, here in California, maybe the East Coast, maybe even North Carolina area, I don't know. But if it catches on, it will be, I think, a very interesting play. Now, furthermore, when I get back from my five-week trip to Canada and the beloved East Coast of this country, I will be preparing to go into, well, first of all, the first job I have the day after I return is for a recurring role that I play in a Christian soap opera, which you may know, called Adventures in Odyssey. Have you ever heard of it?
I cannot say that I have.
Well, damn you to hell! It's a wonderful, funny, very family-oriented, and very, very Christian value series that is played all over the world. Adventures in Odyssey. Odyssey is the name of this fictional town that they've created. And they often have adventures that involve crime of some sort. And I play a character named Detective Polehouse, and I have to solve some of these crimes. It's not the only part I played on this Christian comic soap opera series. I also played the father of the lead role, and our episodes were about abortion and the issue of abortion. Because if he had been aborted, he never would be living in this town and preaching the kind of family values that are so valuable to our nation. So that's my first return job. Then, at the beginning, I'm glad you're so patient with my jabbering. At the beginning,
no, I love it.
Of the, thank you. The next year, 2017, I will be performing for a month in a play called For Piano and Harpo. Now, when I describe this, it may be difficult for you, being born so late into our culture, and for others who might be listening to you, to appreciate. And I'll tell you about that in a minute. But it is, number one, at the Falcon Theater in North Hollywood, here in the Los Angeles area, which was owned by and created by Gary Marshall, the creator of Happy Days and all these wonderful television shows. And what's that wonderful movie that he did, Pretty Girl? I don't know. Gary Marshall, look him up. Died maybe a couple of months ago, very unexpectedly. It's his theater. It's called the Falcon Theater. And I'm not going to try to sell tickets because this is a podcast. But if you're in the area, you might enjoy this. We will be going up on February the 5th, and we run through March the 9th at the Falcon Theater in North Hollywood, and actually in Toluca Lake, for those of you who know the area. And it is a play written by Homer Simpson. Oh, wait a minute. His real name is Don Castellaneta. Okay? And he wrote this play, I'll tell you why in a minute, and it will star him as a character named Oscar Levant. Now, I'll bet you don't know who Oscar Levant is.
Is it a Marx Brothers reference? I'm not sure.
Well, yes. The Harpo reference is a Marx Brothers reference. Okay. Mm-hmm. Oscar Levant was a very famous and very popular a pianist, classical pianist, in the 40s and 50s. And he was actually one of the highest paid Hollywood actors at that time. And Oscar Levant, L-E-V-A-N-T, if you Google him, and I'm sure he'll enjoy it because he's dead, he can use all the Googling he can get, was a pill popper. And he was addicted to pills for various reasons, probably because he had such an active career, like Judy Garland, who took, you know, had pills too. He had to be ready to do his stuff at any time, and he had to be up for it, right? But he went into self-imposed rehabilitation, like my dear friend Chevy Chase just did, again to get clean. And the entire play takes place in a rehabilitation center in the 50s in Los Angeles. And all of this, I'm hiccuping because I ate recently, and I'm sorry, I probably shouldn't have before this. That would have been a compliment if we were on Japanese podcasting.
Not sure what show the bottom of your feet, yeah.
That's right. They believe that burping is a compliment. So be complimented. Mm-hmm. In any event, the supporting cast in this play, other than Harpo Marx, who is played by Paul Sand, a wonderful actor I did a short movie with many years ago, are all aspects of his hallucinations as he gets off of his addiction, okay? So I get to play, like, you know, a dozen roles, his orderlies and his father and another schizophrenic character that he's in a group therapy session with and blah, blah, blah. And the cast also consists of his wife, Debbie LaCosta, and another wonderful actress named Gail Mathias, who is part of a terrific improvisational group out here called the Spolin Players, because Viola Spolin was one of the people who created improvisation as we know it, and another actor named Jonathan, Jonathan last name, who I've worked with recently in some audio improvisational theater presentations. So anyway, it's going to be a very, very interesting play, and it will engage me in rehearsals from January through February when we open, and then through the performances through the end of March, at which time in 2017 I will be participating in a fundraiser for a theatrical group in Palm Springs that recreates old radio shows in front of a live audience to raise money for their, you know, live theater productions. And I've done this for the last 3 years, and one of the highlights is that I and a wonderful actor named Ron Masak, who people may remember from Murder, She Wrote, he was the sheriff in that, he and I do a recreation of the Abbott and Costello Who's on First routine, where he plays Costello, and I play his straight man, Abbott. And the other irony of that is that my late uncle, Clarence Urist, who died of liver cancer because he was the AD, which means assistant director, on a John Wayne film called The Conqueror, produced by Howard Hughes, which was about Genghis Khan, and was shot on irradiated sand in Utah on an atomic bomb testing center. And then Howard Hughes shipped tons of this earth back to the sound stages in Hollywood so they could complete the shoot. John Wayne was playing Genghis Khan, and Susan Hayward was playing, you know, his concubine, one of his many concubines. And everybody on that shoot died of cancer because they were working and breathing in irradiated dust from atomic bomb tests. And my dear uncle died of cancer of the liver because of his association with that. But he was also assistant director on the Abbott and Costello television show. And he would come back to New York when I was a kid to shoot what we call second unit shots, which are like the filler shots that you see on these old television shows, shots of the Third Avenue L in New York, shots of Abbott and Costello's apartment building. He shot all that stuff. And he would bring me back horror props and science fiction props from the movies he was working on when I was a kid growing up in New York. So no wonder, you know, that I was attracted to Hollywood and ultimately came out here. And that is just a sampling of some of the things that I will be doing over the next, what, 4 or 5 months, besides voting for somebody.
Right.
Guess who?
Going back to the play you mentioned where Ed Asner's playing God,
yeah,
that's an interesting idea because if you come off as a moderate these days, you're vilified as if you just drowned a puppy.
Is that right? No kidding. No kidding. A moderate. You have to be extremely on one side or the other, right?
Yeah, that's very unattractive to me.
Well, sure. I agree with you, John. I think that is. Yeah. I think that's a dangerous place to be, frankly, because the fact is that our democracy is based on compromise. Okay.
Yeah.
One group has a strong opinion about something. The other group has a strong opinion about something. And when our democracy works, there is an honest debate, and people come to a middle ground so that they can combine the ideas and move forward. If they don't come to a common ground, then they come to what we call loggerheads, and nobody goes anywhere, and we're all adversaries to one another, which is not a healthy place for a participative democracy to be. Our play is about that issue. It really basically says the ultimate message from God is go out there and listen to what everybody is saying and then make up your own mind. You know, we even touch upon the fact that conservative speakers, because of the millennials' rather twisted view of politics, has reached a point where conservative speakers can't always speak on liberal campuses. And that's just wrong. Everybody is entitled to speak out in our country, and everybody is entitled to make their own damn decision about who they want to lead the country forward or backward, because some people want to do that. It's not going to happen, but that's what they want to do, and that is the stress that we're under right now. But the fact is that our play is open enough to both ideas, and the challenge for us as, you know, Hollywood hopheads, is to be able to give an honest voice to the conservative beliefs as well as the liberal beliefs and let them be shared equally on the stage by the audience judged by the audience just as it's judged by Ed Asner, who plays God. And I'm certainly not going to tell you the conclusion that he comes to, because what he says when he sets up this entire debate, which happens in limbo, where the conservative and the liberal have been drawn up from the earth to go through this debate, he has to, he sets up the idea that they have to prove to him which of their ideas is better so he can put his mighty thumb on the scale, because he believes that when he starts anyway, that one side or the other has to predominate in order for our country to continue. And that, I submit to you, dear friends, is the fallacy. Because what really has to happen is that we have to meld our ideas so that we can move forward together. And that doesn't mean necessarily that I'm backing Hillary Clinton. Excuse me. I didn't tell you. Mm-hmm. I'm getting over a bout of bronchitis right now. Just a minute. I could go on for 4 minutes, but I'll stop right now. But it does mm-hmm. mean that we do have to listen to one another and make our decisions based on what we think will be the best direction for our country. Because, you know, I was born in 1940. I'm 76 years old, as I think I said. That's a patriotic number. I've seen a lot of what our country has gone through, and I've seen that we've survived it. Okay? And yes, of course, we've made mistakes, but we've also done some glorious things to make the world better, and certainly to advance our country, although it's very slow, you know. But that is, I think, the nature of our planetary existence, because we are born and we have increasingly long lives, and we have, so that means our opinions, when we become actually cogent and able to express them and make and vote on them, last a much longer time than they used to. So my question to everybody is, do you have the courage to change your opinion? Donald Trump has changed his opinion many times, and he was, you know, from Democratic to Republican and back and forth and back and forth. So if he can do it, you can do it too. And it might mean that you have to sacrifice a certain belief in order to express your belief in the future of the country and rise above ideology and rise above propaganda and rise above the pettiness of this campaign, which is actually, for a satirist, a political satirist like me, a gold mine! Because mindless fellowship. I find it fascinating, like our dear friend George Carlin, to be a curmudgeon and to view mm-hmm. things, you're right, from a perspective of humanity, all of humanity, not just the half a million supporters that believe in Donald Trump, you know, are in that basket of whatever the hell she called it. I believe that all humanity is in that basket, like George Carlin. and the fact is that I gain a great deal of delight from laughing about it and from exposing it to everybody. It's really non-partisan. It's really totally partisan. It really says, you got the power. You got the power, babe. Go for it. Use it. Make your choice, and the rest of us will live with that choice, because that's our democracy. That's the glory of our democracy. And then we'll debate it, and then we'll roll it back, or we'll roll it forward, or we'll figure out if it works or it doesn't work, and we'll move on slowly, slowly, but definitively towards, I hope, if we're not wiped out by some madman on another continent who is developing ballistic missiles and atomic bombs, you know, oh, God help us. It's the other title of our show. If we survive, we have a good chance of evolving our democracy as a shining example of a freedom in the world and the possibility of the actions of freedom slowly but surely developing the kind of a system that the whole world hopefully will admire and emulate. I don't think I'll be around by the time that happens. And not because, you know, I'm going to be nuked by Jung-Yong Il, or whatever that sick person's name is, but because we have, thank God, we have the ability to die, okay? And right? To pass on, if you will. I love that expression. We're going to pass on. Now, those of us who are of Christian faith believe we're going to pass on to a heavenly existence. Those of us who believe in God but do not necessarily ascribe to an organized religion believe that we will pass on into the universe, and that we may, God willing, if there is such a thing, have an opportunity to reinvent ourselves based on that which we have learned through experience, may I add, painful experience, just like birth, although death is painless, by the way, because death is less. Death is over. It's over. Out you go. Coming in. None of us remember coming in. That was painless for everybody but our mom. And going out is going to be just as painless as that. But we are going to then face a reality, and we don't know what it's going to be. We can believe in what it's going to be, and that can give us solace, and that can give us a reason for living, which is wonderful. And, you know, and we can assume that because we're Christian, we're not going to burn in hell. But there's no hell in almost all the other religions, right? Yeah, basically, what we're basically saying is we want to live a good life so that we can pass into the next life as purely as we can, as the best light we can possibly manifest as we become another star in the heavens. And what we leave behind is basically a life that people could either, the people who have known you, who have you touched, can either appreciate, love, and like Jesus said, you know, follow me, use as a path to enlightenment, a path to a good life for those who are left behind. Or you messed up and so badly that they're going to learn from that too. They're going to say, I'm not going to do what Grandpa did, because when he left his wife, it created chaos in our family, and we never got over it, you know? I was married to a Norwegian, and I spent one summer at what they call a hytta, which is like a hut or a cabin up in the above the fjords, in the mountains above the fjords. And let's just say, you know, it's a hut, yeah, it's a cabin somewhere up in the mountains, wherever the heck you are. And I watched these two sisters of this one family who owned this cabin rolling on the ground, tearing one another's hair, yelling at one another. And I turned to the brother, and I said, what the heck is going on? He said, it's nothing, it's just family. I believe that the earthy family is the same thing, that we are going to fight with one another, we're going to roll on the ground, we're going to tear our hair out, if we're lucky, by the way, if we can actually express that. But at the end of it all, somebody's going to say, that's okay, sis, you're just family, and you haven't gotten over something that happened a while ago where one sister had one opinion, another sister had another opinion, and neither of you are willing to walk in the other's shoes and appreciate the power of forgiveness. And forgiveness, dear friends, I submit to you, is compromise.
One of my favorite Fire Sign Theater albums is Give Me Immortality or Give Me Death.
Yeah.
And I just have a quick question, and this is probably so obscure you would hit me if I asked you in person, but I believe that's the album that has the line, you're talking about something, and the guy responds, oh, I'm not going to say it sucks, but it inhales vigorously. Do you remember who wrote that line?
Now, will you tell me again what you said? Something inhales vigorously? Remember, I'm talking on a phone out here as the sun sets in our canyon home in Benedict Canyon. And you're sitting in the dark, I assume, back there in North Carolina, right?
Yes, yes, right.
So, will you rephrase the question in some way I might be able to answer you coherently, or I may not be able to, but that'll be fun too, so shoot.
There's a segment, and I think they may be talking to the guy up in the helicopter.
Oh, yeah, that was just, me. That was Happy Standard. Yeah.
And I somewhere in that exchange, one of the guys is describing a situation, and the guy says, well, I won't say it sucks, but it inhales vigorously. Do you remember that line on that album?
Yeah, yes, I do. I do. And it's ironic because as one of the measures on our ballot that's coming up on November 9th here in California is the legalization of marijuana.
Mm-hmm.
The legalization of marijuana. Now, that is something that the Fire Sign Theater we weren't predicting it. We were hoping that it would happen. How can you be in two places at once when you're not anywhere at all, which is kind of a marijuana reference in a way, also known as the Marx-Lennon album, because we had a picture of Groucho Marx and John Lennon on the cover, which they actually gave us personal permission to use. And on the inner part of the album was Nick Danger, Third Eye. And that's where that fantastic cigarettes commercial first happened. So we were saying then that marijuana was going to be legalized, and we didn't add for marijuana cigarettes called Fantastic Cigarettes, long in the leaf, short in the can. And it was many, many years later when we did our Immortality album, that knowing that we still hadn't achieved our goal of predicting, you know, of marijuana being legal, that we used that particular line. And through all of our albums, we always kind of assumed that people were going to be potheads and that they were going to get high on smoke, natural nature's smoke, instead of distilled liquor, which I still adore. I'm going to lift my little cocktail here of vodka and with an olive and an onion in it right now to the power of alcohol. So here's to everybody who believes in the power of alcohol. But on the other hand, if you want to dry out some marijuana leaves, roll them up and smoke them down, and it may work for you or it may not. But, you know, at least you'll say, damn, I tried it. Here's to your health. I'm going to drink right now. That's good booze, as Jackie Gleason used to say on his show. So, again, it's all about people have to cut to the chase. John, it's all about getting high. It's all about getting high. And people get high in so many different ways. You can use drugs, but you have to be very careful about what you use, because if you use a drug you're going to be dearly addicted to, it's going to screw up your life. You're going to lose your life to a drug. And that's damn silly. It's like the Muslims, if you excuse this jump, losing their lives to a rug. If you are fanatically religious and you have to pray umpteen times a day by kneeling on a rug and putting your head on the ground, I submit you're crazy. I submit that Catholics who believe that they're actually drinking the blood of Christ and eating his flesh in the symbolic wafer and the symbolic glass of wine are also crazy. And they're all going to, you know, send money to their causes, and which is totally wrong. Religion should not be connected in any way with contributing to anything but your local church. I contribute to my local church. I'm sure you do. When that basket goes around, it's not full of deplorables. It's full of empty. And you, if you want to support your church, you drop something into that basket. Or you do that wonderful pass that some people do, which is just like putting your hand over it and opening it and pulling it back in. Now, the reason that I feel this way, John, I was born in Goshen, Indiana, to Amish Irish parents. You can find out about my ancestry if you go to, let me see, where can I put you? RosannaOfTheAmish.com, maybe. There was a book written about my family history, which was a marriage between an orphaned Irish woman named Rosanna McGonigal and an Amishman named Christ Yoder in Pennsylvania in, where the hell did they come from? I'm not sure. I'm old. But it was this, the books that have been written about this were written by my uncle, J.W. Yoder, Joseph W. Yoder. I'm now collaborating with a guy, Joseph Warren, Samuel Warren Joseph. He has the same middle name. But my uncle Joe, Samuel Joe, okay. It's the Bible, folks. It gets me confused. You know, what book is it in? You know, I mean, if you know it, you're a better man than I am. However, I appreciate it. I just wouldn't know that. So in any event, there is actually a mini-series online about Rosanna of the Amish. It's a beloved story because it's a story of the first intermarriage between the Swiss, Bavarian, Deutsch, Pennsylvania Dutch, and the Irish. Now, if you think about it, and I'm sure some of you have some Irish blood in you, if you think about it, the Irish have commingled with everybody. And that's part of the beauty of the Irish and the strength of their convictions and the fact that they were attracted to people who were not of their lineage. And now here again, I'm talking about the power of compromise. I'm talking about the gospel of contradiction, folks. It's really what the world is all about. People have married black people. People have married Chinese, Japanese, Poles, Irish, Russian, Jewish. Now, Jewish is not a nationality. Jewish is a religion. But Jewish represents people who have come from all over the world in adversity to end up as part of our amazing cultural reality. And folks, that's what it's all about. It's all about compromising. It's about blending ideas because of love and evolving the world. Or if you don't believe in evolution, let's call it revolution. And if you don't believe in revolution, let's just call it love. Because that's all it is. If you don't follow your instincts and you don't propagate in within those instincts, you're not forwarding the great adventure, gift, the great gift that this earthly manifestation manifests for you and for all of us. We have a very unique ability if we are not prejudiced, if we follow our hearts, we have a unique opportunity to advance this planetary experiment and to see what happens from it. People become too egotistically attached to ideas. And they believe that power is ego. No, power is love. Love is following your heart. Your heart is the most powerful instrument in your reality. The sexual instrument is fascinating and fun, but we all know that when we follow our sexual proclivity, our sexual engagement, we often connect with people who are beautiful, sexy, wonderful, who want to have us, who want to have them, but they're ultimately not who our heart tells us we want to be with. And many people are trapped because of the reality of materialism, and the sperm goes to the egg, and hello, we're parents! And then we have to deal with all of that reality. But the fact is that if you, and believe me, I know, because as a popular kind of quasi-celebrity traveling all over the world with the Firesign Theater celebrity and Procter & Bergman celebrity, I've had hundreds of sexual experiences with women. And I've learned from that that some of them are chemically correct, some of them are emotionally correct, some of them are spiritually correct, and when you find somebody who is sexually, spiritually, and materialistically, well, maybe that's sex, but it has to do with the way they deal with the world as it is in reality, you got a keeper. And those of us who find that keeper, which I think we call soulmates, are eternally satisfied. You know, again, I hope I'm not going too much off the track, but these are things I've learned in my 76 years, and I've had very unique experiences, which many people have not had. And so I want to share them with young souls, medium souls, old souls, and I'd like to hear if you could get responses, whether the young souls go, okay, that may help me, and the medium souls go, oh, God, I wish I made that decision and not the other. And the old souls go, uh-huh, yeah, been there, done that, been there, done that, uh-huh, done that, and done that, because that's the way I feel.
I wanted to touch on this, and this was when you guys were on the Alan Handelman show. He asked you about this movie every time.
Yeah.
But did you ever get the acknowledgement or royalty check from Mystery Science Theater for creating their show with Jay Men Forever?
Now, that's a good question, John. Mm-hmm. No. You cannot copyright ideas. And what we consider that we have done as Firesign Theater, which, again, I will reiterate, was a four-man satirical comedy group that basically created a new medium of comedy recording by putting out a series of interrelated, if you listen to them in order, multi-layered comedy experiences, much like combining radio with comedy, drama, and what have you. We inspired many people. We inspired Saturday Night Live, who decided that it would be fun to have a repertory company, which was Firesign Theater, four guys, like Monty Python, four guys, mainly playing all the male and female roles. Are you listening, North Carolina? All the male and female roles? I don't quite know which I should identify with. Maybe I should pee in a woman's room. I don't know. I do know that in France, they don't have restrictions on bathrooms because everybody pees and everybody poops. So men and women can actually go into bathrooms in France and pee. Women can stand and pee. Did you know that? Do you women know that? You can stand and pee. Men can stand and pee. Men can sit and pee. Men can sit and poop, and women can sit and poop. I don't think you want to sit and poop in a urinal like they did in, like Randy Quaid did in that wonderful movie that's achieved cult status called, oh, God, I don't know, with John Goodman. Can you help me here?
No. Was it Whack Canadian Bacon? I'm not sure.
No, the invasion of the tomato eaters. No, I don't know. I can look it up. But that's a joke I made that maybe only a few of the listeners can relate to. But Randy had never seen a urinal before, and he went to a bathroom, and so he took a crap in it. very, very funny movie. The Longoski, what's it called? By the way, John Goodman, bless his sweetheart, is a great fan of Firesign Theater, and to bring us back to my point, was inspired by the Firesign Theater, because he did a show on radio with in New York in Hell's Kitchen, which was on a public service station like WBAI there, where he, inspired by Firesign Theater, used to do surrealistic comedy with a group of people who also knew Firesign Theater and did a radio show together. Now, again, for those of you who know Firesign Theater, and those of you who don't, and you'll probably never understand this reference, but we were inspired by the Goon shows. The Goon shows were a long-running series on the BBC network in England, which starred such people as Peter Sellers and Harry Secombe. Some of you may know Peter Sellers, of course, and they did a totally surrealistic radio show where anything could happen, and transitions were made by using crazy sound effects records. If you are interested in Firesign Theater, you can go to firesigntheater.com. Also, we have a 24/7 live, well, it's live because they're playing records, but we're dead, a 24-hour, 24/7 pod streaming site called firesigntheaterradio.com, where you can be introduced to our surrealistic, crazy comedy anytime you want. Okay? And again, Iterate, if you want to follow up on who is this crazy guy talking, phil.proctor@mac.com is my email, and you can access my blog, my blogs, my newsletters at planetproctor.com.
Monty Python's come up into the conversation a little bit tonight. Have your paths ever crossed with any of the members of Python over the years? I'm assuming John Cleese, didn't he? Several of his wives have brought him to Los Angeles, haven't they?
Yes. No, I actually met several of the Pythons. The first time was when they were doing a show on Broadway, and I saw it, and I went backstage and met all of them. And then over the years, because several members have done things out here in Los Angeles, which coincided, ironically, with television shows I was appearing on as guest stars or something, I would go and have lunch in the commissary with other members like Michael Palin. I've had several meetings with Michael Palin. But I guess, hey, listen, let's listen to the helicopter. Yeah, helicopters passing over us are a normal feature. Uh-huh. But I guess the most interesting connection I had was with John Cleese, who did a show with a group called the L.A. Guitar Quartet, an Emmy Award-winning musical group, who performed up in Santa Barbara. And John Cleese lived about, well, maybe 8, 9, 10 years ago up there. And he loved the L.A. Guitar Quartet. And you will, too, if you go to their website, LAGQ.com, mm-hmm. L.A. Guitar Quartet. And he, after the second time he saw them perform, invited them to dinner. And he said, "Boys, I like what you're doing, and I'd very much like to do a collaboration with you. And would you think about it? Because I'd love to do something on stage with you." So the head of this group went back, you know, thought about it, and came up with the idea that it would be great to cast John in an adaptation of Don Quixote, okay? And so he, in collaboration with an authoress who wrote a very successful Don Quixote piece in San Francisco, created a one-man show for Don Quixote, which was accompanied by music, actual music of the era that Don Quixote was writing his amazing romantic novel. And John said, "Yes, I'd love to do this." And so they performed it in Santa Barbara. And at the end of that performance, they had contracts to do a tour of it. And John said, "I can't. I'm doing a tour with my about my ex-wife, because I'm going through a terrible, terrible divorce with this C blank and T, and I can't go on the road with you." So somebody, a member of the group, told the leader of the group, "Well, there's a guy I've heard about named Phil Proctor who might be able to do this." Now, he didn't know who I was, but he had been working with the musical director of a theatrical company that I was involved with and still am, called the Antaeus Group, and we had done some Gilbert and Sullivan productions together, and our musical director was a guy named Jan Powell, and this member of the L.A. Guitar Quartet lived underneath his apartment and had heard him rehearsing, and John had and Jan Powell had told him about the people who were working, and so that's how he knew about me. Oh, my God, it's so wonderful the way these things work. And so the lead guitarist of the L.A. Guitar Quartet, and I'm going to actually try to find his name for you, called me, and he said, "You've been recommended. Would you like to do this?" And I said, of course I'd like to do this. You know, and it turns out that he was a fan of Firesign Theater. Okay? And mm-hmm. so he came over to my house, and we met. Here, I'm trying to find this online so I can be more coherent about this. L-A-O-G-Q, I didn't do it right. And we had a wonderful meeting right here at the little table outside I'm talking to you at. And mm-hmm. and he signed me on to do the tour that John couldn't do. Quartet, for many, many years, I've been touring with the group all over the country and Canada, doing a one-man reading of John of Don Quixote, accompanied by music of the period played by this four-man quartet, the LAGQ. And that's one of the other wonderful connections that I have with that great group.
Terry Gilliam is on his second attempt trying to film a movie about Don Quixote, isn't he?
Yeah, probably so. But that's an old story, frankly.
Mm-hmm.
That's an old story. That's a movie that they've been trying to sell for a long time, and it's probably not going to happen. Because although Terry wrote, you know, and I met him too, although he did endear many people to the project, he wasn't really able to make it happen.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any regular contact with David Osman? Do you guys, you foresee you and he doing anything else collaboratively in the future, or is that just too busy schedules?
Yeah, well, of course I talk with David, and he's up on Whidbey Island, which is a large island off of Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
And my dear dead partner, Phil Austin, lived on Fox Island, which is off of Tacoma. And David, who has now had two heart incidents and has a stent in his body, basically is kind of staying there. And
mm-hmm.
likely that the two of us would be able to do anything in person anywhere. However, as I told you, the Firesign Theater's record, Don't Crush That Dwarf, Hand Me the Pliers, has been inducted into the Congressional Library of the United States of America, and they are contemplating buying all of our archives, and which they should do, by the way, and moving them to Washington, AC/DC. And they, if they do that, they are, of course, going to want David and me to come back for the inauguration ceremony and perform something. And we are totally prepared to do that.
Someone broke into the storage facility for a lot of your Firesign and solo project memorabilia. Did they ever catch the people or get any of the stuff back?
Yeah, they did catch some of them. And the irony of it is that regardless of whatever punishments might be forthcoming, none of them can afford to reimburse the approximately $13,000 loss that we ensued from that. And the saddest thing for me is that I created a series of artistic collages cut from magazines of the time in the 60s and 70s. And I stored all of those books in our storage space. And for some reason, totally unknown to me, because how could you make money off of those? They stole them all, and they're totally lost to time now. Luckily, I have slides of most of them, so I can recreate them if I want to.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm going to get philosophical here again.
Mm-hmm.
These are material things. We can survive the loss of material things. And over my long life, I have known many people who have lost things, many, many more things than I lost, or we lost. In that theft, through fire, flood, and various other acts of God. And everyone has gone on to have successful, creative, and artistic lives. So, again, these things are lessons to us. They're painful lessons because they mean that we didn't honor what it is we've created enough to protect it in a way that eventually, near the end of our lives, we have to redistribute it in a way that will influence others in what I would say is a positive direction. So I feel guilty as being a part of having created that situation. I won't get into it how I did, but it had to do with a break-in at our house. But on the other hand, it is really the first time, other than minor thefts, that I've had to experience a major theft of something that was close to me from my soul, my gut, my heart, and that was of which the originals were destroyed and lost. And that's tough. It's a tough thing. It still hurts me. But on the other hand, here I am, and these things can be in their own way replaced. And what people have to also think about in terms of their own lives, and there's so many of us, is that we're saving stuff, but as George Carlin said, it's our stuff. And what does it really mean to you? And at a certain point, if you're lucky, you will be allowed the opportunity before you pass on to pass on various things, writings, objects, art, whatever, furniture, cars, I don't care what it is, a lawnmower, to somebody else who will have the benefit of using that material object. And that will make you feel better before you pass on and go to that big garage sale in the sky when you have to say, I'm sorry, God, I got nothing, just this soul.
Well, you've been very generous with your time. Is there anything else coming up you wanted to talk about or that we didn't touch on that you would like to?
You know, I would suggest that people befriend me on Facebook, Phil Proctor, P-R-O-C-T-O-R. It may be difficult because I have 5,000 followers at least, and you can't have more than that. I have a fan page, but I don't know how to use it. But every once in a while, people drop out because they pass on or they're too ideological to want to stick around and hear my ideas. That's all fine with me, right? But if you wanted to befriend me, go to Facebook and ask to be my friend, phil.proctor@mac.com. I don't know. That's my email. Phil Proctor, and I'll do my best to accommodate you if I can. And if I can't, go to phil.proctor@mac.com and ask for Planet Proctor, and I'll send you some fun stuff, and we can have an even more intimate and personal communication if you do wish it. I am not at all afraid. In fact, I embrace the social media that we've created. I was a friend of Marshall McLuhan, and he was a personal friend of ours, and I met him when he was alive up in his private quarters in Toronto because he wanted to add more comedy to his lectures. And the people that I've met are extraordinary, but the fact is that Marshall McLuhan predicted everything that's happening today. I'm so sorry he didn't survive to see the internet. Although maybe he's looking down at us right now and going, I told you so! But please, embrace it, love it, do positive things with it, and think positively about your life path. If you are religious, embrace the forward path to goodness and sinlessness. Sin, by the way, originally means in archery, not hitting the center of the target. Okay? It's not that horrible. Try to hit the center of your target. And if you go astray, restring your damn bow and aim better the next time. And don't drink before you shoot. Got it?
Sounds pretty good.
Anyway, I love you all, and thank you, John, for getting in touch with me, and I hope you can have fun with this podcast, edit it, do whatever you need to do with it, and feel free to stay in touch with me. And if we ever want to talk again, I'm always game.